This is VOA News via remote. I'm Gene Randall. Coronavirus numbers today again drive home the tragedy of the pandemic and what it's doing to the world. COVID-19 cases have surpassed 2.25 million, with the death toll above 156,000. Here in the United States alone, there have been nearly 707,000 infections with close to 38,000 fatalities. Both numbers are the highest in the world. The figures are from Johns Hopkins University. The death count in New York State is approaching 18,000. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the key to winning the war against COVID-19 and reopening the American economy is much larger scale testing. China has revised upward its number of COVID-19 deaths to more than 4,600, reflecting 40% higher numbers for the city of Wuhan, where the pandemic began. For governments around the world, it is a balancing act, trying to weigh the need for painful virus shutdown measures and moving to shore up their badly stricken economies. The past 4 weeks have seen 22 million American workers file for unemployment benefits, a record. In a joint statement today, a group of 13 nations, including Britain, Germany, Italy, and Mexico, call for global cooperation to lessen the economic impact of the pandemic. Italy and Germany have relaxed some of their coronavirus shutdown restrictions. Together, they've lost 27,000 lives to COVID-19. The other side of the picture, Britain, which has a death toll nearing 15,000, has extended its lockdown for at least 3 weeks. France has added 4 weeks onto its closure, with a death toll of almost 19,000. And with 20,000 lives lost, Spain is expected to lengthen its COVID-19 controls. Here in the United States, the coronavirus debate has taken on a partisan appearance. Republican President Donald Trump is urging his supporters to, quote, liberate three states led by Democratic governors. Minnesota, Virginia, and Michigan are all important for Mr. Trump's November re-election chances. To stay up to date on all the news and the latest on the pandemic, you can go online to voanews.com. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump's words on Twitter about liberating states have been taken to the streets to demand an end to stay-at-home orders. Noisy demonstrators have been staged against Michigan's Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Her COVID-19 order includes a ban on traveling from house to house. On the president's call to liberate states, the governor of Washington State, Democrat Jay Inslee, says, quote, the president is fomenting domestic rebellion and spreading lies. Mr. Trump's controversial tweet came on the heels of his assurance this week that the nation's governors would be in charge of how and when to reopen their state economies. Public health experts in the U.S. and elsewhere are warning that relaxing coronavirus shutdowns must be accompanied by wider testing and the tracing of infected people to prevent a new wave of disease. In what seems a snubbing of such thinking, the U.S. state of Florida today opened the beach in Jacksonville. The United States is struggling to test enough people to track and control the spread of the novel coronavirus. President Trump this week released a plan to ease business restrictions that hinges on a downward trend of positive tests. But more than a month ago, he declared anybody who wants a test can get a test. Harsh reality has set in, as labs and public officials say critical supply shortages are making it impossible to increase testing at levels experts say is necessary. Republicans have accepted Democratic demands for additional federal funding for hospitals as part of an effort to gain congressional passage of the Trump administration's $250 billion emergency request for a small business paycheck subsidy, which has run out of money. South Korea's health minister, Kim Gong-lip, said today that new COVID-19 guidelines could be issued soon and that officials there are looking at allowing South Koreans to engage in certain levels of economic and social activity. Wide-scale testing is credited with holding down South Korea's COVID death toll to 232. As a clearer picture of COVID-19's deadly toll emerges, African Americans are demanding an explanation for why the disease has been especially cruel in its effects on blacks. There are increasing calls for strategies to blunt the devastation being witnessed in African American and other communities of color. Associated Press figures show that nearly a third of those who have died from COVID-19 in the U.S. so far are African American. The U.S. Navy's top admiral says he'll decide soon on the fate of the aircraft carrier captain who was fired after pleading for commanders to move faster to safeguard his coronavirus-infected crew. Admiral Mike Gilday will rule whether Captain Brett Crozier stepped out of line when he went around his chain of command and sent an email pushing for action to stem the outbreak. About 670 sailors on the USS Theodore Roosevelt, now docked at Guam, have tested positive for the virus, and seven were hospitalized. One sailor has died. More news at voanews.com online. There is also a convenient, easy-to-use mobile app. I'm Gene Randall. Via remote, this is VOA News.
welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
We've trained about 150 journalists in the country to support our cause. We've trained so many doctors to support our cause. We've been working collaboratively with GMA, that's the Ghana Medical Association, to support our cause in community engagement, public education, and all the other aspects of COVID-19.
The Ghana Health Promotion steps up education efforts to combat the spread of the coronavirus.
Mr. President promised that Nigerians will receive feeding for school pupils in their homes. The unfortunate thing is that all these promises remain what they are, promises. They have not been felt by their people.
The Nigerian main opposition party calls for quick action to prevent citizens from rebelling against the lockdown aimed to stop the spread of the disease.
How dangerous it is if the disease is to spread beyond what it is now. So we made this very, very painful decision, but we thought it is a decision that is going to save the lives of Malawians.
And a Malawian court prevents the government from imposing a 21-day lockdown plan beginning Sunday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Promotion says the organization has stepped up efforts to educate the population to stop the spread of the coronavirus. Dr. Dacosta Abuaje, who is also the leader of the Risk Communication and Social Mobilization in the fight against COVID-19, says Ghanaians are reacting positively to the group's sensitization efforts. The authorities have confirmed 641 cases with 8 deaths and 83 have so far recovered from the disease. Dr. Dacosta tells me his organization has also trained journalists and other stakeholders to educate the population as part of the strategic measures to fight the spread of the disease.
Public education in Ghana for COVID-19 is going on very well. We started with the above-the-line communications and at a time when there was no community spread. But now we certainly know that there is a little bit of community spread, so we are moving to the various rural areas, the hotspots, like, for example, today, myself and the ISD team went to Choco, Bukom, and we were happy to have Bukom Banko supporting us in the public education. We will continue to intensify it, but at the moment, it is going very well. And I will indulge the support of all Ghanaians to help us in cascading the messages.
Dr. Abuaje Dacosta, how is this lockdown, as directed by the president, helping in your efforts to curb the spread of the disease?
The lockdown was very, very necessary. It's enabling the Ghana Health Service to do what we called contact tracing and also to test and treat patients with positives. At the moment, we were given a target of 10,000 based on the evidence we had at the time, but we have been able to trace more than 50,000 people, and we have tested most of them, and we have found about 641 to be positive, and they are receiving treatments. So for the lockdown, it was a necessity for us to carry out our assignment as mandated by the president, because we know that if you move, you move with the virus. So now that we certainly know that we are on course, I think it is good. It has yielded the results that we anticipated. So
how have Ghanaians been reacting to the education drive launched by the Ghana Health Services, and how have they been embracing it so far? Are they putting them into practice? What are some of the benchmarks you're looking at in order to improve their health conditions as well as limit the spread of the disease?
Let's put things into perspective. We are talking about the preventive measures. Core of it is social distancing. I mean, as for the rest, like washing of hands and the right running water. Majority of them are practicing it. But when it comes to the social distances, let's look at it from our cultural practices. We are not used to that. So it will take a very long time for it to sink in the minds of Ghanaians. So that is why we from the Ghana Health Service have actually intensified our education on the social distancing. And I must be honest, yeah, when you look at the social aspects, I think the social protection agencies are sharing food. But it has not really gone well as was expected. But there has been improvement as we continue to advise them. And today, I actually set an example when I was with Bukom Banco in Bukom and the Jamestown area. I actually educated them on how to practice social distancing in sharing of food to the various vulnerable communities. So yes, obviously, we'll continue to educate. But like I said, it is not part of our culture. So we have to intensify that. And I am prepared to lead that.
What about the issue of stigma? Because we've heard reports that family members, friends, shun people who have recovered, supposedly, from the coronavirus infection. How are you helping to reduce sharply the issue of stigma?
Stigma has become a very topical issue in this COVID fight. But what I'll say is COVID-19 is not a respecter of persons. Let's come together as Ghanaians to fight it by supporting victims rather than stigmatizing those infected with the disease. Everyone is at risk. So there's absolutely no point stigmatizing. I have heard that some communities are even rejecting isolation centers. And to the best of my knowledge, these isolation centers, when put in various communities, will help isolate people who have got it in their society or in that community so that we avoid the community spread. And this is why I said in my initial remarks that for Ghana, what we have to do is to try so hard to avoid community spread. So if communities are rejecting isolation centers, then there is a problem. It will be counterproductive to our fight. But as someone leading the risk communication and social mobilization, I will say that I'll continue to put in effort to educate various communities. Now that we've done some amazing things. See, we've trained about 150 journalists in the country to support our cause. We've trained so many doctors to support our cause. We've been working collaboratively with GMA, that's the Ghana Medical Association, to support our cause in community engagement, public education, and all the other aspects of COVID-19.
Dr. Dacosta Abuaji is the director of the Ghanaian Health Promotion and leader of the Risk Communication and Social Mobilization in the fight against the coronavirus. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, has expressed concern workers in the informal sector of the economy have been left to fend for themselves. The party said if not addressed quickly, they will soon rebel against the lockdown. It forms part of the government's effort to stop the spread of the coronavirus. But the opposition party says the government has so far failed to meet the needs of the poor. Supporters of the administration rejected the criticisms. They said the government has stepped up effort to resolve the challenges cited by the opposition. Kola Ologbodiyan, spokesperson for the main opposition PDP, tells me that the government must do more to ease public tensions surrounding the shutdown.
The People's Democratic Party is very concerned about the implications of the ongoing lockdown. We are concerned because for majority of the people, particularly those in the informal sector, the sellers of perishable items, the Okada riders, the Uber drivers, the vulcanizer on the side of the street, the mechanic, for the people in this informal sector, who are largely in the majority of our population, and who make their living on what they are able to earn on a daily basis, life has become very traumatizing. And in densely populated areas like Lagos or the border communities of Ogun State around Lagos and in the satellite towns of the Federal Capital Territory, Nigerians are becoming restless. And we are worried as a party that the government need to improve on whatever it is doing in the area of attending to humanitarian needs. Otherwise, Nigerians are lamenting that they have been shielded from dying from coronavirus while being sentenced to death by hunger virus.
Well, Kola, what do you say to government officials who are saying that they are implementing strategic measures, both medically as well as palliative measures, to resolve some of these concerns that you are raising?
The palliative measure processes, to say the least, is a sham. It's a sham for us. It's a sham because they are not data-based. And it's unfortunate that you find a situation where money are being put on table like wares for sale and being distributed or are said to be distributed. There is no accountability. And also, donations from philanthropists and donor agencies are scattered. They are not in any pause where expenditure could be monitored. And this is worrisome to majority of Nigerians. Nigerians are saying that they are hearing billions of naira being donated, but they have not seen the effect in their lives. They are not aware about how these billions of naira are being deployed. And the government in itself looks incapable in delivering on even the promises made in respect of palliatives to the people.
Supporters of the ruling coalition that I spoke with are saying that warnings by the PDP that the people are restless and that there could be pushback or resistance to the lockdown as directed by the president is a little far-fetched and quite an alarmist approach to efforts being made to curb the spread of the disease. What's your take?
It is unfortunate that supporters of President Muhammadu Buhari and his administration are busy politicizing recommendations and proposed approaches to make life better for the ordinary Nigerians out there. How can anybody claim that the proposal by the People's Democratic Party to the sitting government that they should implement palliative measures for the people as alarming? There is nothing alarming about it. What is alarming about the fact that in some parts of Lagos State, Nigerians have become so restless that they are on the streets? What is alarming about the reality of people saying that they are ready to confront coronavirus and it is going to kill, that it should kill, rather than allow hunger to kill them in their homes? What's alarming about that? What's alarming about saying that, about stating the fact that the government promised palliatives to people and it has failed to reach the people? What's alarming about it? It's unfortunate that the Buhari supporters are politicizing processes rather than advising the government on the truism of the situation, on the truth about the condition of the ordinary Nigerians out there, about the fact that the tomato seller does not know what he will feed on this night, about the fact that even when the pandemic will have gone, he doesn't know how he will start his business all over again. And we have advised government on what to do, particularly in the area of tax cuts. We have advised government on what to do, about how they can reach directly to the people through subventions. We have advised the government on what it can do, about quantity easing, on how they can help business people to be able to manage through the current situation in which they have found themselves, particularly in payment of salaries and what have
you. Kola, what are the major indicators that, if established today, will make Nigerians feel that the government is meeting their needs in this lockdown as the government implements measures to curb the spread of this disease?
First, it is important for the people to be able to feed their families. Mr. President promised that there will be a release of grains from the silos. Mr. President promised that about some trucks of rice that the customs seized will be distributed to the people. Mr. President promised
that the payment of incentives to 2.6 million people be expanded to 3.6 million people. Mr. President promised that Nigerians will receive feeding for school pupils in their homes. The unfortunate thing is that all these promises remain what they are, promises. They have not been felt by the people.
Kola Ologbodiyang is the spokesperson for the Nigerian main opposition party, the PDP. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. High Court judge has blocked the government from implementing a nationwide lockdown for at least 7 days. The ruling late Friday came after police used tear gas to disperse hundreds of market vendors protesting a 21-day lockdown that was to start Sunday. The government says the lockdown is needed to halt the spread of the coronavirus, which was so far infected 17 people in Malawi and killed two. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
Protests in Malawi against a coronavirus lockdown turned violent Friday, with social media posts showing protesters looting shops and police using tear gas to disperse the crowds. The protests began Thursday when hundreds of vendors took to the streets chanting anti-government slogans and burning tires. Malawi's coronavirus lockdown will shut down all non-essential businesses and services for 3 weeks, including large markets where street vendors make a living. Smaller markets will be allowed to stay open between 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. Matilda Ligowe, a vegetable seller at the main Limbe market in Blantyre, says without a place to sell her goods, she will only get poorer. She says the president has made a very good decision, but he could have appreciated the poverty that is in their country. We are very poor people, says Ligowe, and we can't manage this. Here at the market is where we earn our daily food, she says. So 21 days to us is like 1 year. Ligowe says they will not participate in this lockdown. Malawi's protesters have petitioned city authorities to give them food and money to sustain them for the 3-week lockdown. Health rights activist Dorothy Ngoma says the lockdown is likely to create food shortages and child malnutrition among poor families.
Much as I would really love to see this lockdown materialize, but as we do that, the children are going to die. What are we going to do? We have a few cases, yes, but our government has not even put any packages or even plans to make sure that they don't die. I'm not surprised. And if they are in the street protesting, I'll definitely join them to protest.
Political analyst Vincent Kondowe said the protests could have been avoided if authorities had first consulted with the public.
They could have taken an effort to reach out to the people, and they could have taken a participatory and conservative process, maybe through the chiefs, and explore maybe locally based solutions.
Malawi government spokesperson Mark Bottoman told a local radio Friday that the concerns of vendors are genuine. He said authorities would engage with the vendors to make them understand that the aim of the lockdown is to prevent the spread of the virus and save lives. Malawi's government was due Friday to announce support measures for the poor during the lockdown. President Peter Mutharika said the restrictions would last until May 9th, but could be extended if the coronavirus outbreak was not brought under control. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Meanwhile, the Malawian Information Minister says the court ruling will undermine the administration's effort to combat the spread of the coronavirus. Mark Botomani says the government is unhappy with the ruling but will abide by it. He tells me that the court's ruling is disappointing, although the government will respect it by not carrying out the lockdown.
Well, we have received the judgment with a lot of misgivings, but we've had to accept because it's a court ruling. And at the end of the day, because we're a law-abiding government, we've got to, comply with the injunction.
That means that the government would have to wait for 1 week before beginning the 21-day lockdown, thereby revising your initial order. Have you announced it to the people of Malawi about respecting the dictate or ruling of the court?
Accepting the ruling doesn't necessarily mean that we are satisfied with the manner in which the judge has given the injunction to HRDC and others. But like I said, we abide by the law. And obviously, we will go by the injunction. We will comply, and obviously we've already started communicating to the nation that such is the status, and we'll go by that. So as to what will happen on the 24th, we cannot say now until we cross the bridge when we get there.
Some Malawians are saying the injunction placed on the 21-day lockdown could undermine efforts by the government to curtail or stop the spread of the coronavirus. Is that your stance as well?
Well, it's true, Peter. The very reason that the government decided to lock down the country is to stop the spread of the disease. Because like I said earlier on, the first cases were imported cases. But now what we've had is the, local transmission. And that's the most dangerous situation that we're facing now. So we need to control this so that it should not spread beyond the territories that the cases are. And the only plausible solution that we could find as government is to lock down the country. And it's not that we're not prepared. It's not that we did not consult. We've been meeting a lot of stakeholders during this week and even last week and the weeks before, stakeholders starting from the doctors, the Society of Medical Doctors. We've been meeting the members of the clergy, we've been meeting traditional leaders to consult them, show them how dangerous it is if the disease is to spread beyond what it is now. So we made this very, very painful decision, but we thought it is a decision that is going to save the lives of Malawians.
What is the next line of action for your government to take? Because there are fears that if not properly addressed, the infection rate could go exponentially bad for the people of Malawi. So how do you intend to implement new strategic medical measures to resolve and stop the spread of this disease?
Well, it's true, Peter. The very reason that the government decided to lock down the country is to stop the spread of the disease. Because like I said earlier on, the first cases were imported cases. But now what we've had is the, local transmission. And that's the most dangerous situation that we're facing now. So we need to control this so that it should not spread beyond the territories that the cases are. And the only plausible solution that we could find as government is to lock down the country. And it's not that we're not prepared. It's not that we did not consult. We've been meeting a lot of stakeholders during this week and even last week and the weeks before, stakeholders starting from the doctors, the Society of Medical Doctors. We've been meeting the members of the clergy. We've been meeting traditional leaders to consult them, show them how dangerous it is if the disease is to spread beyond what it is now. So we made this very, very painful decision, but we thought it is a decision that is going to save the lives of Malawians.
Mark Botomani is the Malawian Information Minister. He spoke with me from Blantyre. Thank you.
are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, is calling on the government to ensure official figures of the coronavirus infection are accurate. The party also condemned the report of abuse of citizens by security organizations, including the police. This as the government implements measures to stop the spread of the coronavirus. Christopher Kalila is an opposition parliamentarian and head of the UPND's health committee. He tells me that the government should do more to fight the spread of the disease.
All I can say is that the United Party for National Development is concerned about COVID-19 like everybody else in our country and everybody else in the world. With regards to the question of the number of cases, we cannot say with certainty whether these cases represent the true picture or not. This is for our friends who are in government, and the figures that we are getting is based on their surveillance system. What we are concerned about is the low levels of testing that is going on in the country. As an example, as of today, from the time COVID started, the government has only been able to test 1,653 people from where we have the cumulative total 45 cases. What we believe is that perhaps if we could test more people, if we could go in the communities, maybe we could pick out a few more cases.
What are your views about measures the government is implementing or has implemented so far to help curb the spread of the disease?
So I believe that's a very important question as it comes to the crux of the matter. I believe that epidemic control measures guided by international practice, which is based on WHO guidelines. If you look at what is happening in our country, obviously for me as a keen public health observer, I have noted that our government are doing basically what everybody else is trying to do. I mean, things like sensitizing the communities and the population in terms of how they can prevent themselves from catching COVID-19. These are standard things, all things like washing their hands, sneezing etiquette, obviously social distancing, and the stay-home campaigns, and generally also making sure that those that have been exposed either do self-quarantine or through the surveillance system in the country, they are quarantined, and also contact tracing, going around for those that came in contact to the exposed cases, looking for them, including case management. If you look at our 45 cases, 30 have recovered, meaning that we are managing these cases very well. We should give credit where it is due. However, I would like to say that we could do more so that we clamp this COVID-19 as quickly as possible. We believe that as UPND, we need to scale up in the area of testing, as we have said, so that we don't miss out any cases out there in the community. We need to garner or mobilize more resources so we can procure more test kits, go out there, set up testing centers around the communities, including testing roadblocks, and also just making sure that everybody else comes on board, including the question of stigmatization, which may keep people away from testing. Secondly, we also believe that perhaps we need to lock down Lusaka province, which keeps to bring these cases to the fore. Obviously, various countries are doing measures which suit their context, and it must be a balancing act. In our context, this is what is happening, and as UPND, we would probably have just gone one or two steps further than what is happening in terms of scaling up testing and locking down Lusaka province.
What do you say to supporters of the government who are of the view that the UPND coming out to say the government should do more, it would have done more, or taking the steps already being implemented steps further is just mere politicking?
COVID-19 pandemic is a global disaster, and at national level, obviously, it has caused so much despondency and anxiety among our citizens to the extent that as a political party, we have decided to put our differences aside and join hands with all progressive forces in bringing to the table whatever we can to mitigate or indeed to control or stop this the spread of this COVID-19 in our country. As a matter of fact, our Our president, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, is on record for having extended his olive branch to any citizen in this country, including the head of state, to join hands together to try and bring all that we can to the table, be it resources, be it technical expertise or knowledge, in order to ensure that we work together to put away or to stop this COVID-19 disease. It is therefore erroneous for anybody to state that the UPND is politicking when it comes to this disease. As a matter of fact, only the other day, we joined hands with government. We brought on the table the support by way of donations. We continue to do so to help both the patients and those that are looking after them, both our frontline staff as well as the security officers that are manning the quarantine centers. So basically, when it comes to this national disaster of the COVID-19, we are in it together.
Christopher Kalila is a Zambian opposition parliamentarian and head of the UPND's Health Committee. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Botswana civil society group is calling on President Mokgweetsi Masisi to establish an independent inquiry into law enforcement violence against citizens during the lockdown. The Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV/AIDS of Bonela also condemned reports of law enforcement officers attacking an unarmed disabled person for allegedly failing to comply with regulations of the lockdown. Taboho Harisanya, project coordinator for Bonela, tells me that the law enforcers found guilty to have abused citizens during the lockdown should be made to face the full force of the law.
Violence perpetrated against an unarmed man with a disability, and this violence was due to his non-compliance with the emergency regulations, and these are regulations that were passed last week in Parliament after the Parliament of Botswana essentially allowed or voted for the extension of a state of emergency for a further 6 months to allow the president to put in the measures in place to deal with COVID-19. So in our response to this newspaper article, we essentially then requested and strongly urged the president to ensure that there are investigations that, or rather there is an police investigations unit that will be responsible for holding people, specifically security officers, to account where they have been accused of taking liberties and essentially violating people's rights. So let me just clarify to say there is a police investigations unit, but it is not independent in nature. So our call really is to make sure that it is divorced from the system so that it has an objective view, and that the officers that do offend in their pursuit of forcing compliance on citizens is essentially from a non-affiliated unit.
What does your group say to those who are saying it is too early to be calling for an independent investigation into some of these things in the face of the growing challenges of the disease, and that this could be dealt with after the disease is under control?
The state of emergency in Botswana will essentially be for 7 months. It is the month of April that we are currently under, which was initially 28 days. Then when the 28 days ends, we will be in another state of emergency as allowed for in Parliament yesterday. One violation, one reported violation, is enough to call for independent investigations. The view that it is too early, the view that we could wait until the end, essentially means that we are sanctioning possibly law enforcement officers acting with impunity for an entire 7 months or for 6.5 months. So we definitely would not agree with that view, and we think the time to put it in place is now. It is not in any way harming the efforts of the government, and in fact is assuring the nation that a state of emergency does not mean that our human rights are suspended. But just as the president assured us last week, or assured the nation last week, that indeed it will demonstrate that indeed he is taking all necessary measures to ensure that while we are fighting COVID-19 and doing the best that we can, at the same time, our basic human rights and freedoms remain core.
What do you say to critics who say that what you are saying is right, but what should be the focus right now are checks and balances which will be subdued due to the state of emergency, with the president having enormous unbridled power unchecked, and that the very essence of Botswana's democracy is threatened by this? So checking the president's presidential powers is more pressing than human rights violations, which could be tackled. And if not the powers checked, then the democracy will not be in existence for human rights to even exist. What do you say to that?
Well, Peter, we would fundamentally disagree with that view. First of all, given the discussions in Parliament and given the addresses by the president, we are not made to understand in any way, shape or form that the systematic checks and balances that exist in our democracy have been suspended or they will be eroded. That is definitely not our understanding. The judiciary, our independent judiciary, is still very much active, and where violations have occurred, people can approach it for recourse. We also understand that as much as Parliament will no longer be sitting with the frequency that it can, but in order for the president to make any substantial decisions, he will still need to engage with Parliament. So definitely there is not that feeling that our democracy is any way at risk. But simply what we're saying is because our democracy is not at risk, it means while we are addressing a disease, which is really the whole reason why we have the state of emergency in the first place, it is really for us to have laser focus and be able to allow the president to deal with this, with the virus. So while we're saying, while that is being done, let us make sure that we continue to respect, or that people's rights continue to be respected. So I would say that is not a reality at this stage in Botswana, and I think that is definitely not the prevailing view.
Teboho Haresanya is the project coordinator for the Botswana Network on Ethics, Law and HIV/AIDS, or BONELA. She spoke with me from the capital, Harbour Road. The UN Children's Fund says not enough attention is being paid to how the coronavirus pandemic affects children. While the elderly are more vulnerable to the virus, the measures put in place to contain COVID-19 may have a far-reaching impact on the physical and mental well-being of kids around the world. VOA Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
A UNICEF report finds many of the measures aimed at slowing the spread of the coronavirus are necessary, but could have a catastrophic impact on children. Lawrence Chandy is lead author of the report and the director of UNICEF's Office of Global Insight Policy. He says few children's lives are unaffected in one way or another by the pandemic, noting that 60% of all children globally live in countries where full or partial lockdowns are in place.
The unprecedented simultaneous closure of schools across the world is affecting alone 1.5 billion children, which is, you know, almost all children in the world. The report also mentions the more than 360 million children across 143 countries who rely on school meals.
Chandy says children are no longer getting what for many is their only meal of the day now that schools are shut down. He says child protection services also are largely closed, leaving children exposed to domestic violence and other forms of abuse and exploitation. So far, the coronavirus itself has not killed many children. But Chandy says its indirect impact on child health is likely to be calamitous. He notes immunization campaigns around the world have been put on hold.
That will set back global campaigns and polio by years, I suspect. And there are 23 countries we've counted around the world that have put on hold their measles inoculation campaigns. The effects narrowly of the global recession on infant mortality, one would expect to result in hundreds of thousands of additional child deaths this year.
UNICEF is calling on governments to broaden their focus beyond the narrow count of new cases and new deaths from COVID-19. It says a more balanced approach is needed to deal with the new risks arising from the pandemic that are threatening the lives of children around the world. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Dance, dance, baby, shake, shake, yeah. Hallelujah, Hosanna, girl, you I want. Give your body banana sweet in my heart. When you dance, you better wow. Give my love is forever. Want to sing you the makosa, oh, yeah. Where your mama do? Where your papa do? Where your sister do? Where your brother do?
Come and touch me, no, hey. Yeah. And I'm willing to spend all my life with you, baby. I choose you. If I'm to lose, then I want to lose with you. They say that I will forget, I see truth in you. You. She was calling for me. Do you really care? Show me what I'm for me, baby. Check me in the town. To be sincere, I will do almost anything for you. Anything for you.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, and producer Saida Hamdoun, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, judge each day not by the harvest, but by the seeds you plant. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.